over, John.
It's mine.
Oh, you fuck. Oh! Ooh, to the face! Oh, that's a back
problem. The whole world was watching
need
that.
Some Tylenol after that. Oh, shit!
Are not made for walking.
Seinfeld!
Elaine?
Valentina.
Elaine?
Actually, it's Contessa Valentina Allegra.
Whoa, deep cut.
You know, it's hard, but I don't like to repeat myself, so you can just call me Val. But don't call me Val. Just keep it in your head.
Well, we're going to have some explaining to do,
this.
I guess.
Making a shield!
Uh-huh.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. This man is crazy. This man crazy. He's trying to be Captain America so bad.
John,
you ain't. You got fire,
John Walker made this in a cave with box scraps.
This man is crazy.
Welcome back to New Rockstars. The Falcon and the Winter Soldier episode 5 reveals these boots were made for Julia Louis-Dreyfus as Contessa Valentina Allegra de Fontaine, aka Val, aka Madame Hydra.
Ooh.
The big cameo promised for this episode. A big actor, a Marvel character, not so big, but hey, one, you're now here on YouTube looking for an explanation for who the hell this is, or as we like to say,
What the Falcon?
This is Inside Marvel, New Rockstars After Show for The Falcon and the Winter Soldier. I'm Eric Voss, here with MT. How you feeling, MT?
I'm feeling good. I am so glad that we got Elaine in the MCU now. Seinfeld confirmed. Seinfeld confirmed.
Or
in the
Vice
MCU.
President / President Selena Meyer in
of course,
the MCU.
Veep.
Or old Christine.
I mean, more so Veep.
She won an Emmy for it. She wanted to curse this baby. That's what she said in her Emmy speech. As if her career has ever been cursed. She said one of the best careers of any TV actor.
Seriously, she's so amazingly talented.
She
so
is
excited.
Amazing. God, she was on SNL when she was like a teenager. And she
just
crushes it in those
just
sketches in the
80s.
Yeah. Well, she's now in the MCU playing a character that... who knows? There's basically 5 different directions they could be going with this character. And T and I are going to lay those out for you.
Hey.
But... let's talk about what happened this episode, MT. So episode 5 opens with this amazing battle.
Oh my god, it was so good.
I love the stunts on this. They beat John Walker's ass.
Yes.
And they break his arm to get that shield
dude,
off of it. But
hard Civil War vibes by dudes.
I know, like, 2-on-1.
It was
Civil
War
amazing.
Light. It was beautiful.
Civil War music in there that
yes.
Henry Jackman worked in. Oh, it was such a beautiful
Jackman.
Shot sequence. They use his body as a baseball bat to end it. Oh, I loved it.
Dude, that team up like with the at the very end with the using his jetpack to like hit him. Oh my
yeah,
god.
Yeah, right. The ramp.
I clapped. I physically clapped. I couldn't handle
uh-huh.
it.
Uh-huh. Now, Walker surprisingly gets smackdown from his government overseer, stripped of his title, and then he gets approached by Julia Louis-Dreyfus
hey.
As Contessa Valentina Allegra de Fontaine. We'll talk about her more in a bit. But basically, Sam ends up leaving his broken wings with Taurus as keep him.
Yes.
And almost a kind of Iron Man, next time, baby.
Mm-hmm.
Moment, you know? setting up Taurus maybe to be a future Falcon in a way. Then Bucky hands over Zemo to the Dora Milaje. Great moment. And...
yes.
And then he calls on them for a favor. They're saying they're going to bring Zemo to the raft, which is interesting that they're overseeing that prison from Civil War. But yeah, they end up building this new tech for Sam that we don't get to see this episode, but he opens a briefcase and kind of a Pulp Fiction 666 briefcase moment where it just sees a glow on his face and we don't know what it is. And then Sam also revisits with Isaiah Bradley in this amazing heart-to-heart moment.
Such a good talk. It was some real shit, man. It was like two black guys talking. And like, we don't, like, I feel like we don't get a lot of scenes in the MCU where it's just two people of color talking. And, like, it was so nice to see that.
And, it like, acknowledging their race. Like,
yes.
There was no shying away. Like, they're fully talking the way people would be talking right now and dealing with, like, no self-respecting black man would want that shield. And such a powerful statement.
Yes.
And, again, more heartbreak. Carl
crazy
Lumley,
heartbreak.
Get that man
they
an
did
Emmy.
That man so dirty. It's so sad.
Yeah. But, hey, good news is they fixed the family boat.
They did.
Yeah.
The whole neighborhood got together, old block party, fixed the family boat. And Sarah couldn't go through with it. I knew she couldn't.
Yeah, no, no way. And then Bucky and Steve finally get to have like a nice chat, and we finally get to see why these two really need each other. Is you have like the soldier who still hasn't gotten over his past trauma, and the grief counselor can kind of help him through that. Like the proper therapist.
Yes, Sam did a great job doing some accidental counseling on Bucky while they were tossing the shield around. I was like, oh, I thought Bucky would get mad at that, but he was pretty cool with it.
Yeah, exactly. And we get this little line where Bucky says, well, when Steve and I planned it out ahead of time to give you the shield, just kind of giving us some more context to Endgame. But I love this because it also implies that Bucky and Steve must have talked before Steve went back in time to return all the stones. Yeah. And so Steve, like, remembered that deal that he made with Bucky. In his view, like 70, 80 years of living out an alternate life and then coming back and he's like, oh, remember that plan we had, Buck, to give the shield to Sam? I'm still going through with that. So you nod as if you're okay with this trip.
Right. I'm surprised he even remembered. I mean, like, at that age, I feel like your memory just slips away. Yeah. So that's a sharp super soldier memory.
He gives the shield to, like, a duck in that pond. This belongs to you.
Hey, hello, Sam. I haven't seen you in such a long time. I remember how you used to quack. So beautiful.
Quacked in America. That's your name now.
In the Spider-Ham universe, Quacked in America. Let's get it.
That's America's tail feather. But hey, we got some Flag Smashers intrigue. They get these new recruits using that amazing app, whatever it is, and then they plot to attack the GRC vote on the Patch Act. And they get the help of Batroc, who was sent by Sharon Carter. So Sharon Carter and Batroc have a side thing going on. We'll talk about that. And then we get this post-credit scene, which John Walker hammers together his own homemade shield.
In his garage. Just... just pretending to be Captain America no matter what. He is Captain America and no one's going to stop him, apparently. But
we all understand this. So let's talk about who Val is. Let's talk about John Walker's next move. What's going on with Sharon Carter and Batroc and this mystery tech that the Wakandans hooked up Sam with. But real quick, I am wearing our latest Obsession shirt, Anarchy Assembled, which you can get at NewRockstarsMerch.com. But also, we just released a new Zemo-inspired design.
It's dope.
Who's really pulling the strings.
It's dope.
It's a cool, cool looking shirt. Looks amazing. So be sure to get your hands on that one. Now, if you do get the Anarchy Assembled shirt, you will unlock an additional option to write in a custom shout out that will appear at the bottom of these Inside Marvel after shows. Mm. For example, we got our man Ramon Norville who asked, would Steve Rogers have Zemo write back to Lockup or agree with Bucky that he is a means to an end? It's an interesting question. I think Steve Rogers would agree with the Dora Milaje and keep him locked up.
Yeah, I think that Steve Rogers would have never even released Zemo from prison at all. He would just be like, there has to be a way, like, we can do this without releasing such a terrible person out into the world. So, yeah, he wouldn't be on board with Zemo at all.
I think Steve Rogers would have seen the logic of this narrative that maybe it's not that necessary to have Zemo involved with it, but it might just be really fun to see him dance in one episode. You know?
Let's get Zemo out of prison just for dancing.
Right, and for that alone, I've loved having Zemo on board with us. Marisa says, Mephisto train, Zola train, I'm here for it. XOXO, Rizaboo. Oh, hey. That's a great nickname. But yes, we agree. And depending on how you look at Val, Zola might be more likely to appear now.
Yes, that's the first thing I thought when I saw Val. I was like, wait, Hydra? I mean, like, well... First thing I thought when I did some research on Val afterwards.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, yes, I was like, oh my god, Hydra? Zola? That's probably coming.
Right. And then Kyle Brown said, please tell Tommy that my mother and I truly miss him. Go Bills from Tommy Jr.
Oh my god.
Oh, Tommy, call your sons. You have thousands of them across the Western New York area. Call them. All right, MT, what's our first What the Falcon?
Well, obviously, our first What the Falcon of the day is going to be who the Falcon is Val, Eric.
Okay, let's talk about it. Julia Louis-Dreyfus is playing Val, Contessa Valentina Allegra de Fontaine, a longtime S.H.I.E.L.D. agent in the Marvel Comics.
That's right.
She also briefly goes under the name Madam Hydra, and at one point becomes a love interest to Nick Fury. Actually, in the old 90s David Hasselhoff Nick Fury movie, she does appear in that movie. not MCU canon, unfortunately. Should be.
It should be. I mean, timeline. Maybe Multiverse of Madness will make it MCU canon. Who knows? That's Kevin Feige's top priority.
Now, if you didn't know this name, do not feel bad. It's okay if you didn't know this name. I'm not. We're gonna open up the gate. All gatekeepers, do not get behind this character and say if you don't know who this is, you're not a true Marvel fan, because she is one of the lesser famous Marvel names. But she does appear over and over again. She first appeared in Strange Tales 159 in 1967. She shows up a lot in association with Nick Fury, sometimes with Dum-Dum Dugan from the Howling Commandos. She's this S.H.I.E.L.D. agent. She's a badass. She's a fierce combatant. She has an important role in the Secret Invasion comics. She gets replaced by a Skrull in order to try to get more information from Nick Fury. But she also has an important role in the Dark Reign storyline. That's when Norman Osborn is controlling national security. At one point, as Agent 14, that's her designation, she joins Sharon Carter, Agent 13, in what's called the Fem Force. It's a female assault team to fight for female equality under S.H.I.E.L.D. And now, there is another time that she joins Hydra, and she takes on the name Madame Hydra, which is what a lot of people are seeing right now. People are like, oh, she's Madame Hydra. Hydra, it's all Hydra. But I don't know about this just because that storyline where she joins Hydra is really just a ploy to corrupt Hydra. Yeah. She never fully commits to Hydra.
Yeah, she's really aligned with Leviathan, I believe, in that story.
Right.
That's going to be weird. Like, I mean, Kevin Feige could easily just be like, all right, she's Madame Hydra. She's the new head of Hydra, and, like, Hydra's coming back. But, you know, in the comics, she's not really Madame Hydra. She's sort of, like, pretending in a way.
Exactly. But as we know, like, they take these characters in directions that they want to go. It doesn't matter if it was only a small thing in the comics or not really in the comics. And the MCU is a whole different universe. So, yeah, she could totally just be Madame Hydra, new head of Hydra, and it's as simple as that. Now, let's break down what we know about her from this scene. She's this mischievous recruiter. She's got this maybe indigo-colored streak in her hair. She's got this card with nothing written on it, though. Maybe put a black light on there or hold it up to the light. Maybe there's some kind of secret code.
I think only crazy people can read the card. If you John read Walker, this, once he reads a certain level of crazy, he's like, oh, it's her phone number. Cool.
She sympathizes with John Walker for killing Nico. That might just be something she says to him, but I don't think a truly noble character would come to him like that.
Yeah.
But she says, interestingly, that he did the right thing by taking a serum and that it has made him, quote, very, very valuable to certain people. And she knows things that surprise John Walker. Like, she knows he doesn't have the shield. She knows he took the serum, which is something I don't think the government knows. And she says the shield doesn't belong to the government, as if she has some kind of governmental understanding. She calls it a legal gray area.
Yeah. I feel like all signs point to Hydra, man. Like, for me... Yeah. It's just like, she just knows too much about the inner workings of government, and like, she knows too much about what he's doing, and just like, it's just, I think Hydra is slowly building themselves up again, like they always do. Cut off one head.
Is definitely one definite avenue they could be going down. Because, you know, Hydra has come up a few times in this show. They've talked about how Hydra was involved in replicating the Super Soldier Serum. Hydra is always evil. And they're it's one, classically, you cut off one head, more form in its place. You can never fully uproot Hydra from the world. They're
unless you jump on the Hydra's back. Sorry, that was a Kingdom Hearts 2 reference.
That's how you get it. But if she is Madame Hydra, that does surprisingly give some more fuel to our Zola hand card.
Zola. Now, if Zola shows up in episode 6, I'm going to scream. You're going to hear a sonic boom, and that's going to be me screaming. But anyway, continue. Sorry.
No, yeah, so that is absolutely one direction they could be going. Another direction that maybe is the same direction as this is she could be the power broker. A lot of people are saying, does this mean she's a power broker now? I'm not so sure about that, not just because they keep referencing the power broker as he or him, and they would have to say, aha, that was actually a misdirect, and the general viewers were like, well, I didn't pick up on that anyway. It's like, well, for the, you know, for the 15% of you superfans who did pick up on the pronouns, it was actually a misdirect that we said just to fool you. It seems a little silly, but it's possible. I just think that they would have to explain that she has some kind of connection to Sharon Carter. Maybe they would base that on the Femme Force, and the he pronouns might have been ironic there. I feel like a lot of fans would roll their eyes at that.
Yeah.
But just because it feels like not like something that would shock me that much, but just feels like extra steps.
Yeah.
And the same way that, like, a lot of people are saying, well, Sharon Carter must be the power broker. Possible. It's just like, why would the power broker have these mystique, not X-Men mystique, but lowercase and mystique signs all over Madripoor saying the power broker is watching?
Yeah.
And then barflies are like, oh, yeah, she goes to this bar all the time. She's sitting right next to me. Yeah, of course, she's watching it. It just feels like, why would Sharon Carter be doing all these things if she's also the power broker, someone who's supposed to be in the shadows, behind the scenes, but not afraid to get her hands dirty, not only making art deals, but killing people in shipyards. And if Julie Louis-Dreyfus is a power broker, it just play this out next episode. It'd have to be a scene where, like, you know, one of the armed guards to Sharon Carter says, Miss Carter, the power broker is here. And she goes, okay, clear the room, give me the room. And then the door opens and it's Julie Louis-Dreyfus again. Like, we just already had this character revealed in episode 5, and then you'd look back at episode 5 and say, well, then why did they reveal the power broker that way, talking to John Carter?
Well, a way that they could potentially do it, and this is me putting on my conspiracy hat, and it's not really out of left field, but like what you brought up earlier, this character was impersonated by a Skrull in the Secret Invasion. Mm-hmm. So maybe a Skrull is being both Julia Louis-Dreyfus and whatever this male character is playing dual roles. As they shapeshift between two people. So maybe, like, this Val character is how the power broker walks, the Skrull power broker walks around, and as a liaison, sort of like Liam Neeson's character was in the Batman Begins. Like, he was really Ra's al Ghul, but he was pretending to be Ducard. So it would be, that would be a avenue, but like, I think that's too complicated. I feel like this is a very grounded non-cosmic series, but I'm just throwing that idea out there.
I think the Skrulls is a totally third option. Absolutely. It just, we have to wait and see what new property they're setting up. And if it is Secret Invasion, she, you know, the Contessa does have an important role in the Secret Invasion comics, and maybe that's what they're setting up. I'm just kind of wondering what her deal is with Sharon. Like, now Sharon, we find out, is setting up Batroc to, not setting up, but asking for his help, paying him to help the Flag Smashers disrupt the GRC from passing the Patch Act. So maybe the power broker, whoever they are, has some interest in disrupting the GRC, but, the power broker also hates Carly Morgenthau and wants to kill her. So why would they arrange a deal to work with her? I have some other thoughts about what Sharon Carter's real MO is.
I honestly feel like Sharon Carter is probably undercover working for some type of, governmental organization because, and like, including Batroc. I feel like Batroc is... Like, I don't know if it's like a Thunderbolt-y type of thing or like, I don't know. Mm. But like, it just seems that this is very out of character for Sharon Carter to send Batroc to kill Sam or to interrupt anything the GRC is doing without there being some sort of like noble element. Like this, there's just something that we don't know about Sharon Carter that in her motives that I don't think that she's fully... working for the power broker. I think that there's something going on that she's using Batroc for, because I feel like Batroc seems pretty not thrilled about doing this mission. I mean, no, that's the vibes I'm getting, but
he seems compelled, like he's being blackmailed into doing it or paid. Yeah. But if you don't take this money and do it, we're gonna make your life hell in other ways. We'll put you back in that Algerian prison. Now, there is some speculation right now that Julia Louis-Dreyfus' character was supposed to actually appear in Black Widow. And this is coming from Vanity Fair. But I want you guys to read that article because they keep referencing just this 2019 interview with the Veep cast in which Tony Hale just made some comment about Julia Louis-Dreyfus being able to play a great Disney villain. And then Dreyfus just kind of runs with it and says, like, oh, yeah, I'll be able to shoot fire out of my hands and stuff. A Disney villain is not a Marvel villain, per se, even though Disney owns Marvel. They weren't talking about you're going to be in the MCU. They just kind of, I think they were referring to her, like, to, you know, Angelina Jolie in those movies, you know, like, to where she's just, like, a badass and she can be this kind of witch or this fairy tale character who's a badass. So while it's interesting, I wouldn't call this a scoop that for sure Julia Louis-Dreyfus is supposed to be in the Black Widow movie. She might. Someone point to me the actual quote that says she was going to be in Black Widow in particular, because I haven't found that yet. Maybe it's out there. But you mentioned the Thunderbolts, MT, and it's very possible that Val's interest in Walker could mean she's assembling a team of anti-heroes the way Nick Fury assembled the Avengers, which kind of seemed like the tone of her entrance there. Kind of a sense of humor, you know, focused on her boots. She's got this big, long coat. And this could be the beginning of the MCU Thunderbolts. Only because with that streak in her hair, she kind of has some vibes like Victoria Hand, deputy director of the Thunderbolts during The Dark Reign, who also has a similar hair style. Actually, Victoria Hand was an Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. She was killed off. So maybe that's why they aren't naming her Victoria Hand. They pulled some other characters related to Nick Fury and Team Assembly and that kind of thing. And that maybe she does appear in some of these other titles, taking these anti-heroes and putting together a team. And I just think that I'm feeling torn between Hydra, she's Madame Hydra, and just this character who is setting up the Thunderbolts, only because she's interested in him having the super soldier serum, and she says that, like, a little state secret, which Hydra knows state secrets, but she seems like someone who's working within the confines of the law. Like, she's not afraid to walk around and recruit people, but recruit unpopular people. So I think just to kind of narrow down those five options, we got she could be head of Hydra. She could be putting together the new Thunderbolts. She could be part of the Skrulls. She could be part of this Fem Force type of adaptation, or she could be the Power Broker herself or related to the Power Broker. Of those five, MT, are you feeling Hydra?
I'm thinking that it could, it's more, I think it's more likely to be Hydra, but I also think that there could be a connection to maybe Nick Fury, like she has in the comics. Maybe she's working, or she has a, like, actually has a past with Nick Fury, and used to work with S.H.I.E.L.D. and...
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know ya at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Maybe she is Hydra. Yeah, I'm going to go with Hydra. Yeah, okay. I just made up my mind. It's probably Hydra.
Yeah, I'm kind of torn between that and Thunderbolts, but I it could be Hydra. I'm just wondering, like, why wouldn't they say that right now? Like, why... But we know Hydra operatives can kind of be goofball, like Senator Stern in Iron Man 2 and in Captain America Winter Soldier. These people can have senses of humor, for sure, as she seems to have. But I'm just wondering how... Is someone like her on Bucky's list? Because he seems to know everyone who is in Hydra. He was a Winter Soldier. Would she have been able to hide and get away with it for that long? Maybe. She seems to be a very smart operator who doesn't have time for stupid questions. I'm just right now, based off of the context of that scene, she was recruiting John Walker. It's not necessarily about her and her past. It's about her plan. And I think her plan right now seems to be she wants a super soldier who has no other allegiances or loyalties. And to me, that just sounds more Thunderbolts than bringing back Hydra, just because I'm not necessarily that interested in what Hydra's plans are in the future. That feels like something that was a big deal in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and in Phase 2 of Marvel. But I kind of want to see what other dangerous organizations there are out there now in the future. But that's just me.
Yeah, I mean, for me personally, I really do think that Hydra's setting themselves for a comeback. Because we haven't really seen them since, basically Age of Ultron. And, like, you know, obviously Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but, like, I don't personally... think that the non-MCU shows are canon anymore, but it's fine.
Yeah.
I think that Hydra, with Sam Wilson being set up to be the new Captain America, I think that Hydra is going to come back and I honestly think Red Skull is eventually going to come back and, like, you know, they're going to play a bigger role again. Because, like, they've always, you know, throughout the comics, they've been defeated and they come back, defeated and they come back. They're just regular, just a force in the Marvel universe that people can't get rid of. So I definitely think that we could be getting some Hydra teases by the end of episode 6. Sort of like a, and now they're back, sort of. And like Kevin Feige. And like, for me anyway, these Disney Plus shows seems to be setting up reasons for, you know, story elements in the movie, like for story elements in future movies to make sense. For example, with WandaVision sets up Doctor Strange. And this could set up the return of Hydra in a future, you know, Captain America movie with Sam Wilson or... just in general for the MCU. So, I don't know. I definitely do think that this could be a Hydra thing, but it could also definitely be a Thunderbolts setup because it definitely feels like Kevin Feige is setting up a Thunderbolts scenario. So, yeah.
It could be both, MT. The MCU could kind of retcon the Thunderbolts as, like, specifically a Hydra initiative. And that Hydra's thing is, like, you know what we've needed is a team of superheroes, like the Avengers, like S.H.I.E.L.D. has had with the Avengers. And then they just say, well, the Hydra version of that is the Thunderbolts. And this could be something that we see in Black Widow as well. Like, we have Yelena Belova, we have Red Guardian, we have these other figures who could also be recruited to be part of this team. But, yeah, John Walker's an interesting one to watch. There's a lot of other bad guys out there. I mean, get Agatha Harkness on that team. You know?
Absolutely, bro. I am all about that. Like, Agatha would be an amazing spice to the Thunderbolts.
I want to see a scene with Agatha Harkness and Valentina. You know, like, those two longtime sitcom actors just chatting it up would be awesome.
It would be such great dialogue. It would be so good. They could just go off the rails, go improv.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
I think we can presume this is a cameo that Malcolm Spellman was talking about where he said, I want to partner this character with Thor. What do you think he meant by that?
Hell if I know. I mean, it would be, maybe just for comedic elements.
That's because, what I'm thinking too. They're just because, funny. They're both funny.
Yeah, they're both very hilarious people. So it would be funny to see them together in a movie that's not MCU related because I can't see Thor and Val really needing to have a chat.
Like a quick scene. Well, I mean, Spellman was kind of put on the spot there. I think he's thinking, like, he was really excited for Julie Louis-Dreyfus to come in the show. She's so funny. The way she, like, owns that scene. Just someone who, like, when they walk in a room, she's the alpha of that room in a way that Thor kind of is. Yes. Like, just to imagine those two in a room together who are just competing for attention would be pretty fun.
Dude, seeing her and Tony Stark, if he was alive, rest in peace.
Oh, yeah.
It would be hilarious.
Well, we have a lot to talk about from this episode. We're going to get to some more questions. First, we want to thank some people who helped us make this episode, starting with stamps.com. So are you still going to the post office and paying full price for postage, MT?
Never. Why would I? When stamps.com exists.
That's right. Thanks to Stamps.com, you don't have to do that anymore. You can mail and ship anytime, anywhere, right from your computer. Stamps.com saves businesses thousands of hours and tons of money every year. Stamps.com brings the services of the U.S. Postal Service and UPS right to your computer, whether you're a small office sending invoices, a side hustle, Etsy shop, shipping out orders, or if you're like us here at New Rockstars, we use Stamps.com a lot because we're all working remotely. You get discounts of up to 40% off post office rates and up to 66% off UPS rates. Stamps.com saves you time and money. It's no wonder nearly 1 million small businesses already use Stamps.com. So stop wasting time going to the post office and go to Stamps.com instead. There's no risk. And with our promo code WandaVision, we got the old one from the last show. WandaVision is our promo code. You get a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus free postage and a digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. Just go to stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in WandaVision, stamps.com, promo code WandaVision, stamps.com. Never go to the post office again. Never! Now, we also want to thank our friends at Bombas. They make the most comfortable socks in the history of feet. Look how limber I am where I can move my foot up here to show you my Bombas.
That is some great flexibility.
Don't do any weird stuff with that, internet. That's... Why did I do that? Never show the
It's too late, Eric. You've shown your feet.
It's out there. Well, Bombas has literally rethought every little detail of the socks we wear to make them way more comfortable. I wear them pretty much every day. I love the fit and the comfort. They're great with shoes or just walking around the house in just socks, which I love doing. I love doing that. They do more than keep feet cozy. They help give back to the most vulnerable members of our community. For every pair of socks you purchase, Bombas donates a pair to someone in need. The generosity of Bombas customers has allowed them to donate over 40 million pairs of socks and counting through their nationwide network of over 3,000 giving partners. And the impact is more powerful than ever to those experiencing homelessness. These socks represent the dignity of putting on clean clothes, a small comfort that's especially important right now. So give a pair when you buy a pair and get 20% off your first purchase at bombas.com/Marvel. That's bombas.com/Marvel for 20% off your first purchase, bombas.com/Marvel. And our friends at Helix Sleep. You know we've been staying up late on Thursday nights watching and rewatching these Falcon Winter Soldier episodes. We're probably not getting enough sleep. But the sleep we are getting is really good because of Helix mattresses. This is what you do. You take a quiz on the Helix website and they match you to the right mattresses just for you. Soft or firm, whatever. They have the right mattress just for you. I got matched with the right mattress for my sleep style. I've never slept better. They ship it right to your door and you don't have to drive all over town with a mattress on the roof of your Camry. Just try it for 100 nights risk-free. And they were rated number one best overall mattress pick of 2020 by GQ and Wired Magazine. Just go to helixsleep.com/insidemarvel. Take their 2-minute sleep quiz and they'll match you to the customized mattress that will give you the best sleep of your life. Helix is offering up to $200 off all mattress orders and 2 free pillows for our listeners at helixsleep.com/insidemarvel. That's helixsleep.com/insidemarvel for up to $200 off and 2 free pillows. All right, back to the show. MT, what is our next What the Falcon?
Well, I'm glad you asked this, Eric, because the next What the Falcon of the day is What the Falcon is in the box that Bucky gave Sam? That's a really intriguing question. And I honestly think that it's probably his new suit with, like, completely new Captain America suit with vibranium wings. And just Sam's going to be ready to go to fight potentially John Walker and the Flag Smashers. But what do you think?
I agree with you. I think they're waiting to show it off because it's going to look awesome. Now, do we think the color scheme of that blue and white is what we're looking at? Is this going to be like the stealth suit that Cap wore in Captain America Winter Soldier, or is it just that blue and white? Or is that just the color of the box?
I think that that's just the color of the box. I think we're just going to get the full red, white, and blue.
Okay.
Very familiar, very similar to the Captain America Sam Wilson comics. Just straight up Captain America suit. And it's going to look fire.
I'm wondering, is it just going to be a cosmetic change? Are there going to be some like new upgrades? I have to imagine if it's coming from the labs of Wakanda and Vibranium, not only is it going to be sturdier, is it going to have that kind of like, you know how Shuri had the mesh nanotech where it could just kind of shapeshift and change? Will the wings kind of rematerialize as a shield by just like stitching back together automatically to where they don't have to fold the way they used to before?
I don't know. I think it might still be very non-nanotech based, though. I think that there might be maybe a neural type deal, because like with Black Panther, T'Challa could just think and his helmet can go on. So like maybe Sam Wilson could just be like, all right, I'm thinking that I want my wings to open up, and then they'll just open up by themselves rather than him doing anything. Though I don't know how they work in general, but I don't know. I think that there's a potential for any real thing to happen because Shuri's a technology genius, but we're definitely going to see some type of upgrade for sure, and his wings are definitely going to be full vibranium and way more sturdier than his last pair that just got ripped off by John Walker.
My question is, how much will it embody the color scheme and the symbolism of the red, white, and blue stars and stripes? We've seen some kind of like comic book imagery where Falcon has that big star on his chest. But after this conversation with Isaiah Bradley, I think it's going to emphasize Sam's like blackness and not shy away from that. If you're having the Wakandans design it, the way the Black Panther suit embodied like Wakandan culture and that whole aesthetic, I have to wonder, like, why would you have the Wakandans design it? It's not just for vibranium. I think it's also for their aesthetic and their cultural choices, and I think that's going to be reflected in that suit, I think.
That'd be really dope. I hope so. That'd be really cool to see that.
Yeah. Because in the meantime, it seems like Torres is being set up to be Falcon. I think, or at least a protege, Falcon Jr. or something. Like, why leave the broken wings with him if you're not setting that up?
Maybe they could do just like a, you know, a winged Captain America and a Falcon. Like, two winged people. Just kind of like going back to, like, you know, Sam's days with Riley. It's like, now I got my wingman. Now we're two wingmen. And, like, we're Captain America winged themed Captain America team. But I don't know. We'll see. I mean, Torres is definitely going to get those wings by the end of the season. But whether or not Cap's new suit has wings is up in the air. But.
Yeah. Our next What the Falcon is Sharon Carter's plan. What is her relationship with Batroc? How did you read this scene, MT?
I honestly feel like, again, Sharon is working on behalf of some type of governmental organization or intelligence agency and is blackmailing Batroc to use him to either interrupt the Flag Smasher's plans, like sort of like a mole in their operation, or I don't know, like she's just so mysterious. I think that she is pretending to work on behalf of the power broker, but has access to, you know, she had access to those satellites. That helped Bucky and Sam in the last episode. Mm-hmm. And we all know who uses satellites right now. Swords has satellites up in the sky. So, like, maybe she could be working on behalf of Sword. But who knows? Who really knows?
Yeah. I mean, Tony Stark also had satellites, and he was a private citizen.
It's true.
So if you're wealthy enough in this universe, you can have satellites. But I think you are right. She's working on behalf of someone. We haven't gotten answers on her yet. I assume we will next episode. It's totally possible we never really get any firm answers on what's going on with Sharon Carter.
Oh, God, I hope they don't do that.
We'll see. If she is working on behalf of the government, I just wonder, like, it just feels like a lot of steps. Like, she's, like, why would the government set her up to be this arts dealer who's dealing with stolen art? Like, she could just be an operative without that whole side of her job. Like, it's just a weird thing that feels like she's working for some wealthy criminal organization. That might not be the power broker. It might be the power broker. I just feels like the information we've been given about her is that she is in Madripoor. She has some kind of connections with the criminal underworld. And she knows a lot about the power broker. She knew about Dr. Nagel working for the power broker. She has access to satellites. She's pissed off at the Avengers for kind of abandoning her. And she's super rich. She has this nice-ass penthouse in Hightown. So to me, like, if they also add something like, and that was all a cover and she's working for Thaddeus Ross or some kind of government organization, it'd be like, well, why all those extra steps? Or maybe she is just like a John Wick person working for some elite criminal, and that person could be the power broker. What I just want to wonder is, like, why would the power broker now align itself with the Flag Smashers? Like, what do they hope to gain by dismantling the GRC's plans? I don't know if she's working on behalf of the government, why is she working against the GRC by sending Batroc in to help the Flag Smashers, I guess.
I mean, I honestly truly believe that Sharon sent him to fight the Flag Smashers or to interrupt their plans. Because, like, I think that he's a mole within the Flag Smashers right now. He's just that element that isn't part of their team. That's just like, all right, now I'm here to help. And I don't know. Who knows?
Yeah, but... okay. That could be the case. That could totally be the case. Again, it just feels like extra steps. Like, it feels maybe you're right.
Well,
maybe you're right.
Well, like, I'd have to rewatch this. Like, it's Madripoor, man. Madripoor is a criminal land. Mm-hmm. And, like, if you are not a criminal, then you're basically... I feel like you're just... No one wants you around. So, like, I feel like to establish a deep cover, Sharon had to, you know, make it look like, all right, now I'm this art dealer working for this powerful person. So, like, everyone trusts me. Like, you see in the last episode, she's walking through those barricades and they're just like, hey, Sharon, what's going on? Like, we trust you because, like, this could potentially just be a deep cover. So,
or they legitimately trust her because she is in this criminal organization.
Either way, you never know. You never know. So it's either one of those. I think that she's in a deep cover just because of her, like, the character that has been established within the MCU already. I mean, she was a close ally to Steve Rogers.
She was the neighbor, but was someone working for S.H.I.E.L.D. spying on him. Yeah, absolutely.
Exactly. So, like, even though, you know, the government may have let her down, potentially, I just don't think that she would go this far to be this criminal in Madripoor without, I don't know, some type of secret, like, oh, that, it was just fake the whole time, and now I was working for this secret CIA or some shit. I don't know. But
I mean, look, every episode I feel like I'm always rethinking, or I'm overthinking her too much. It could just be as simple as, you know how, like, in Endgame, the writers are like, well, what's the furthest extreme we can take Hawkeye? What's the furthest extreme we can take Hulk and Thor? We made Thor overweight and drunk. We made Hulk, like, he's now just smart. He's a smart Hulk. He fused the brains with the brawn. Hawkeye's become a murderous assassin vigilante throughout the world. And I think they're doing something similar with Sharon Carter. They're saying in the aftermath of the blip, it just changed people's priorities this much to where now that she's been abandoned by her country, this is the choice she made, is to work and work her way up through the criminal world. I think she was meant as a foil for Bucky and Sam. Like, if you're going to be runaways from your government, like, this is what you can do with your abilities. Is you can make a shit ton of money. And I think it was something meant for Sam, someone who is economically struggling with his family and getting a bank loan. I think it was meant as a tease for Sam to be like, I could have this. I could work here. I just think if you're writing these things, that's what you write. It's rare where you write, like, but also it was all fake. But also she's working for... It's really hard to write that way. And it's often very unsatisfying for viewers when you try to reveal that. So I think as screenwriters, they just try to, like, they don't spend all this time writing exposition just to reveal that exposition to be evidence of the contrary.
That is a good point.
I've been wrong before, I guess.
But no, I like that you, just one quick thing. I like that you brought up Hawkeye, because that got me thinking, I wonder if Hawkeye has been to Madripoor, because he spent some time in the continent of Asia, and he's been he was spending some time fighting criminals in Asia. So, like, maybe he's went to Madripoor just to get some leads or something. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But maybe, like, in potentially his actions in, it was Japan, right? With, that fight.
Yeah. It was Tokyo.
Yeah. So it's Tokyo. He created a power vacuum that maybe dominoes were falling, and, like, it affects what Sharon Carter's doing. Who knows? But, anyway, I'm just,
we might not, I will be surprised at this point if we meet the power broker in the flesh in this series. Like, if they reveal it to be Sharon Carter or Val, like, I would just be surprised. They might have business relationships with him, or be trying to bust him or to overthrow him or something like that. But I think it's more likely we'll get a tease of who the power broker is, whether it's a Hydra symbol or a Ten Ring symbol or whatever it is, and we'll leave it for a future installment to dig into that. But I think Louis-Dreyfus was our big cameo, our big casting thing. I'd be surprised if there was, like, another one, because that kind of sucks the wind out of the sails of the previous one. Because then it's true. Like, oh, this is a show that revealed Julie Louis-Dreyfus in it, but it's also the show that revealed this other person. It just kind of takes away from their own headline, you know?
Yeah, that's true. It's true.
But yeah, your guess is as good as mine exactly what Sharon Carter's plan is. To me, it seems like, I don't know why she would invest so much in Batroc to just bring down the Flag Smasher's plan, because it kind of takes the narrative stakes out of Sam and Bucky going to stop them. If they already have someone from the inside, like, I don't imagine them fighting on the same side as Batroc to bring down the Flag Smashers. Unless they say, hey, the JRC needs to be stopped, we're going to join the Flag Smashers in beating Batroc. But then is Batroc the big bad in that final battle? I'm not that eager to see that.
Big bad Batroc.
But it is interesting that Sharon Carter is linked with him. It means that she's been paying him. She paid him that initial mission in episode one, right?
We can assume. Yeah, that's what I'm assuming anyway. I'm just like, that's exactly what I was thinking about. I was like, what? Why would Sharon need this soldier person? Like, what does this soldier, like, what intel does this soldier have that Sharon would need?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think the power broker just has, that's why I keep thinking Ten Rings, because the Ten Rings is just everywhere. They have spies everywhere, and they're like, they're always trying to destabilize certain parts of the world to gain weapons tech, to gain some kind of political advantage. There are probably a lot of organizations in the world that are like that, but they just seem to fit the bill, but we haven't gotten any evidence really that it's them. For now, let's move on to our next, What the Falcon. What do you think is John Walker's next move, MT?
I think that that dude wants to get the shield back. I think that he wants to be Captain America so badly. And like we do see him make this his own shield at the end of the episode. I don't know if you guys missed the extra credit scene. There is a post credit scene, so spoilers for that. But yeah, he's making his own fake Captain America shield, and that explains the different shield that we see in the trailers, and that why it has like different grooves in the center. But I think that he just wants to get that shield back so he can live this fantasy as Captain America, even though he's not anymore.
Yeah. I have to imagine that shield that he's building in his garage is not made of like vibranium or anything, because I don't think you can just get like a blowtorch and weld vibranium that easily. I think he is on a downward spiral right now. This explains why that shield looked different, but he did a pretty good job making a cosplay shield, I gotta say.
It's a really good
shield. That's an A-minus shield, yeah.
Like, that would get you a lot of pictures at Comic-Con. Honestly.
Oh, yeah.
He did a really good job. That's a fantastic.
He did a great job. But he has some kind of suit, just based off of promo footage where you see him walking down the street with that shield. He's going to suit back up. This might be what Val's organization suits him back up with. He's going to try to redeem himself, redeem his name, and he's going to try to finish the job of the Flag Smashers. I think once he finds out where Carly is, he's going to try to kill Carly. And I think at some point, Sam's going to have to defend Carly against John Walker trying to murder someone publicly again.
Yeah, I think that, John's going to do something crazy in the last episode that's going to really ruin his reputation, I'm assuming. And just have him just go on this spiral and just like, maybe, I think that at the end of this, the government ends up using John Walker again as, as U.S. agent. And just like, hey, you're dark, but we need someone that's tough, that's willing to do the dark shit undercover. So we're going to hire you and you're going to do some really crazy shit for us.
Well, that's I think he/Val are going to rebrand him U.S. agent. And that's why I think Val might be more involved with a Thunderbolts plot than a Hydra plot, just because I think she's kind of going to be like Marvel's Amanda Waller. She's going to be like Task Force X. I'm putting together a team of criminals, of people who society does not want to work with or look at as a hero to do the really dirty missions.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty fair guess. That seems pretty like something John Walker would do. So, yeah.
But real quick, we want to thank someone else who helped us make this episode. We got to talk about our friends at Blue Chew. The unique online service that delivers the same active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, but in chewable form and at a fraction of the cost. Blue Chew is an online prescription service, so no visits to the doctor's office, no awkward conversations, no waiting in the line at the pharmacy, and it ships right to your door in a discreet package. Process is simple. Sign up at BlueChew.com, consult with one of their licensed medical providers, and once you're approved, you'll receive your prescription within days. It's all done online. Blue Chew's licensed medical providers work with you to find the right ingredient and strength for your prescription. Blue Chew's tablets are made in the USA. They prepared and shipped direct. It's cheaper than a pharmacy. So if you could benefit from extra confidence when it's time to perform, visit BlueChew.com for more details and important safety information. And we've got a special deal for our listeners. Try Blue Chew free when you use our promo code InsideMarvel at checkout. Just pay the $5 in shipping. That's BlueChew.com, promo code InsideMarvel to receive your first month free. Thanks, Blue Chew, for sponsoring the show. MT, I want to ask you one final question. The Wakandans. Why do you think they're keeping Zemo in the raft? What does that tell us about their role in world security right now? What does this mean for Zemo?
I think that they sent Zemo to the raft rather than taking him himself because they just wanted to keep their relationships with everyone super kosher, because like they kind of deserve to get Zemo, but they're just like, all right, we're just going to put you in the most secure facility ever so you don't escape and underwater. And yeah, I feel like this tells me that the Dora Milaje are trying to just play nice and just like make everyone just be like, hey, Wakanda, you know, they get the job done. Like Zemo escaped, but like they fixed it and like they brought it and like they were just doing their duty. So I just think that they're just trying to, T'Challa just wants to be a good neighbor. But what do you think?
Well, I think this kind of continues that pattern of cooperation between the Wakandans and Avengers Tech and Avengers Security Forces. Because the raft was previously, seemed like something that Tony Stark designed and kind of helped Thaddeus Ross build to contain super soldiers. But now that the Wakandans are overseeing that is interesting. I think it shows that they might be world leaders when it comes to these things, that the rest of the UN might look to Wakanda to trust these things in their hands. And why shouldn't they? Because they are the most advanced nation on Earth. Yeah. They have the most sophisticated technology to handle this stuff. But either way, NT, I think Zemo's going to break out of that prison.
Oh, yeah, definitely. No, either Zemo breaks out or he's approached by Ross and is like, listen, we're making a team and I'd like you on it. And it definitely feels like it could be a seeds for another Thunderbolt-y type of scenario. But I'm just on Thunderbolt's watch for this episode in general. Because
we're on so many watches. We were on Mephisto watch. We were on Zola watch, Hydra watch. Yeah, there was a Hydra watch in WandaVision. And now we're on Thunderbolt's watch.
I mean, like, we do have Batroc. And, like, bringing Batroc back is, like, the biggest red flag for me. Well, not red flag, but the biggest indicator that some type of Thunderbolt's thing is popping off. Because Zemo and Batroc, and like we have Ghost in the MCU, like there's so many different characters that seem like they're being set up for something. So I think it's Thunderbolts.
Yeah. So we will leave it there, but we're going to move on to our patient listeners on Stereo to answer some of their questions. But that is it for this episode of Inside Marvel, the Falcon Winter Soldier after show. MT and I will be back next Friday for our reaction to episode 6, the season finale. My Easter egg breakdown is going to come out on the channel tomorrow for this episode. So follow MT at Mastertainment, follow me at EA Voss, follow New Rockstar, subscribe to Inside Marvel for wherever you get your podcasts. A reminder, you can get our Anarchy Assembled shirt and our new Zemo design. Thank you for watching. We'll close out with our favorite moment of the episode. Bye-bye, everybody.
Later.
Excuse me. Who are you? Anyway, you did the right thing.